Hey, Collaborus. I'm Ben Leroy.
And I'm Jason Buchholz.
Welcome to Collaboracast. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing all right. And I think that let's just get it out of the way. It's two old dudes talking about the weather because I have a complaint and I've just been bottling it up. You will, no doubt.
Weather report and the sports report. It's like, yep, a real old timey newspaper.
Yeah. You will no doubt recall that for the last few episodes, I've been complaining about the cold and the dampness and the misery. It is, as earlier today, it was 94 and we are having record-breaking heat and the humidity is somewhere north of 150%. It's just, it's soup out there and it is miserable. And the human body just is not meant to go from the 40s and the 30s to the 90s in the span of a week. It's just not a thing that's supposed to happen. And I will die on this hill. I will just say that I've had enough of it. I'm going to write a strongly worded weather to the media. Strongly worded weather. That's now my new post-rock band name. Oh, yeah, you should go check out my band. It's called Strongly Worded Weather.
Sounds like a Far Side cartoon.
I play a 4x4 tire. It's really amazing. I hit it with a 2x4.
37 minute long songs.
It's atonal and it's offbeat, but it really makes you think about things. Okay, seriously, if anyone
a t-shirt for the first time, I think ever. I'm used to like six hoodies.
Yeah, no hoodie today. I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there. If anyone wants to start a band called Strongly Worded Weather and you want to get the website going tonight, I will take $3 off a manuscript evaluation if you just go ahead and do the hard work. If you book us some gigs, now we're talking. I'm giving you $50 off. If you book Strongly Worded Weather. I'm not even going to remember this. What's going to happen, because my brain works this way, is in a week, someone's going to be like, yeah, dude, Strongly Worded Weather. And I'm like, what? And they'll be like, yeah, you talked about it in the podcast. And I'll be like, I did. But for right now, you, me, Jay Buchholz, it's a really special moment to be able to talk about Strongly Worded Weather. I'm overcome at the moment.
The ground floor. I did just unearth my clarinet, so I could... I'm good for some
your clarinet.
Accompany that 4x4.
My kombucha bottle.
There we go. Uh-oh.
We've got kombucha is great for just randomly exploding all over the place whenever it decides to do that too, which would be part of the performance art aspect of Strongly Worded Weather.
Of course.
So we talked about this. This is kind of a big day because foreshadowing. In previous episodes, we talked about we were going to do some query letter review on the podcast. I would, just because you are a veteran of having to write a query letter. Do you remember those days? I mean, what was that like for you? What was that process?
Oh yeah, and I'm hoping there will be additional opportunities for it. It's exciting. It's exciting when you get to that point. But also nerve-wracking because you've been working for X number of years to put this manuscript together, and then you have to sell it in three paragraphs. So it's a high-stakes piece of writing. It's a high-stake page, but it's exciting once you know how to do it.
But it's worth pointing out here that it's exciting. It's high stakes. It's stressful for a lot of people. I know that in hearing other people's story, it's like, I just wrote a whole book. Why can't I write this one letter? And it's because of what Jason was just talking about. It's hyper condensed. You have three paragraphs or so to really get someone's attention, get their excitement, and give them an action item over it. You don't get to go back the next day and write query letter volume version 3 final for sure this time. Like, that doesn't happen because now it's out in the world. There are no guarantees. You can have a great book and you can write a great query letter and still just not find a home for it. That's an unfortunate reality. But there are definitely some things that you can do to improve your chances of not just being tossed into the slush pile in a way that is going to guarantee that you're not really read or considered, which is an unfortunate thing. We're going to go over some of those things. If you didn't listen to last week's episode with Jason's agent, Wendy Levinson of the Harvey Klinger Agency, I would recommend doing that because she talks about her process. Also, there are a couple of videos up on our YouTube channel where I did query letter review in the past, and I go over some of the things that I'm looking for specifically over there. And you are not alone in this. There are all sorts of resources. And if you send in your query letters, there's a chance that Jason and I will read one right here on the podcast and talk about it and talk about what works and what doesn't. So without any...
Though it is high stakes, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And it's the wrong way. It's pretty obvious. Like, it really is just basic following instructions. So there is some leeway in terms of the letter itself. If speaking to Wendy last week, I asked her what some of the don'ts were, and there were things like, if an agency says don't send attachments, then don't send attachments. I mean, there are things that are, that all you have to do is be conscientious and do your research. And then, and that's going to eliminate, that's going to take off the table the possibility that you're going to make a one of these kind of blunders that are going to automatically relegate you to the digital dustbin. So it's just a matter of doing your research, and it's not a lot of research. It's just, they want the first 50 pages pasted into the form or in the body of an email. You know, these are just basic instructions on how to submit. As long as you follow those, you're going to get it in front of somebody. You're going to have somebody read it and really consider it.
And just as a preface to what I'm looking for in a query letter, and I'm still reading query letters on a regular basis, I want to know the title, the genre, the word count, a brief description of the book, and an author bio. And the author bio can be as long as it needs to be. You don't need to feel like you need to stretch it. If you don't have a Pulitzer under your belt, that's okay. Like, you don't need to come up with things. Really, the bulk of it is you are just trying to get the attention and the curiosity piqued of the person who is going to be reading your sample or requesting your sample.
Right. And especially when it comes to fiction, your resume, obviously, if you've had some significant publications, that's absolutely something that you should mention. But if you haven't, that's fine too. There are competitions out there for unpublished authors. There are publishers and agents who are actively looking for people who have not published anything before. They would love to have a hand in finding those people and helping them bring their work into the world. So don't feel like you have to pretend you're somebody you're not if you don't have that kind of history, if you don't have accolades, prizes, just say who you are. I think in that case, they just want to get a sense of who you are and what you do, and the sense that there's a personality back there.
And I think it's important to point out that sometimes I will see people who feel like if they're not already a famous author, they're not going to be able to get people's attention. And that's just not the case. And a debut novel is an opportunity for a publisher to be able to do some special buzzy marketing around the idea of, like, here's a fresh new voice, here's a debut novel. And there are contests for debut novels. There are awards. There are special call-outs for debut novels. There isn't for a second or third novel. That's not a thing. So this is actually an important part of your package that you're putting together, is that it's a debut novel. Do not look at this as a liability. This is an asset. It really is. And it's also something where people can make whatever decisions they want to make. But I do know that I have seen people who have rushed into publishing a book because they really, really want to see this book out. And they either self-publish or they go with a micro press, and then sales don't do well. And then they query their second book. And it's important to keep in mind that your chances, just put everything in a vacuum, your chances for catching somebody's attention are greater with "this is my first novel" than if you said, "this is my second book. My first book was published last year and it only sold 30 copies. And that's that." Like, you don't look like a seasoned veteran for having put out something in a rush and selling a few copies of it. That's not how that works. It'd be better to keep your powder dry and have a first novel. Again, do what you want, and it's okay. And I'm not scolding, and I'm not telling you what to do or not do, but just know that as a consideration when you are doing the calculation on all of this.
All right. Should we leave the theory behind and get into some actual letters?
Yes. Will you read the first query letter for us, or would you prefer me to?
Why don't you take this one, and then I'll do the next one.
Okay. We should note that we have made an attempt to anonymize. I'm going to go ahead. If that's not already a word, I'm going to make it a word. The query, by removing any identifying information that we feel kind of gives something away, that may make the query letter a little bit confusing, because I'm making the changes on the fly as I'm reading it, but we should be able to get to the point. So here we go.
Might read a little bit like a censored letter from an inmate at times.
Dear editor, hello, and thank you in advance for your consideration of my debut novel. And then the author provides the title of the novel. So good, we've got the title of the novel. A story told through the eyes of an abandoned greyhound racer longing to discover the truth of who she really is beyond the grief and pain of her physical and emotional scars. While searching for a place to belong, her earth angels and celestial guides, the moon and the stars, teach the melancholic greyhound how to tap into her brave energy, confront the bullies in her midst, overcome the fears lurking in the shadows, and heal the wounds and scars she carries. The greyhound learns to listen to her intuition, find her authentic voice, and begin to heal the scars she carries. We witness her connections with nature, the way, deepen, which leads to awakenings and opens her heart to forgiveness, trust, and perhaps love. She begins to believe in herself again by embracing the darkness with resilience, stepping into the light, and rising above the fray of her life. As a retired 25-year veteran teacher of English and creative writing and a humanities department head, I know there is a tremendous need for a story such as mine. Geared to YA fiction readers, this work was written to offer help to children who suffer with anxiety, depression, and loss, especially in this post-pandemic world. More than 8% of children in the US, over 6 million, suffer from anxiety and depression. The Greyhound can help guide kids through their own healing journey. The book shares the intriguing perspective of an animal protagonist with popular books such as The Greyhound of the Baskerville by John Gaspard and The One and Only Bob by Catherine Applegate, as it emulates the gentle lessons of self-love offered in The Velveteen Rabbit by Marjorie Williams. The book differs in her approach to reach children in that embedded throughout the Greyhound's experiences are magical and fantastical elements as seen in her communications with characters like the trees and the moon, and in her dream sequences. Heartfelt displays of the harsh reality that grief and anxiety can affect in the aftermath of being bullied and of suffering great loss are seen in the tender moments of the Greyhound's introspection and desire to heal and better herself. This resonates with readers as evidenced in the praise from acclaimed American essayist, John D. Agata, and award-winning production designer, Phil Messina, and is a testament to the book's message and potential impact. Enclosed, please find the required sections for submission of fiction. The completed manuscript is 72,000 words and has previously been edited by, and then fills in the name of an editorial company. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and start with your feedback, Mr. Jason? And I'm going to make some notes to myself while you do that. So I'm listening to you, but I'm also paying attention to what I'm doing.
All right. Well, for one, it's well written. I think that it's evocative. There are a good variety of sentence structures. I think that the writer comes across as very competent. It's a little long. I think that the opening paragraph that summarizes the story is good and concise, as is the bio. But then I think it gets a little, I think that it is moving along at a good clip at that point. And then I feel at that it starts to lose some of its momentum. The statistic about the children, 8% of children in the US suffering from anxiety and depression. What do you think of that? I'm undecided as to.
Yeah. Speaking of like what you were saying, like I agree with a lot of the points you were making, and I do feel that it goes on a little long. And I think that this is a thing that happens because we want to make sure that we get across the points that we're trying to make and the intrigue that we're trying to create. And we don't trust ourselves to fully engage the person reading the query letter. So we add more details and more details. And this is a case where trusting yourself and trusting your reader would go a long way. Like, really, to me, there's the description of the book, and I'm good with the second paragraph. The other book titles that are mentioned, and this was one of the things that I forgot to mention in what I'm looking for, are comp titles, so that whoever is reading the query letter can have an idea of where does this belong on the bookshelf and who are some of the cousins of this book. And when you do that, it's important to pick books that are new-ish. There is a little bit of uncertainty if it's the last 2 years, the last 3 years, 5 years is probably a bit out, but you want to have things that show in this current market there is an audience for this book, as evidenced by these things that have already come out. And it's important that when you are picking those titles that you don't pick outliers. If you write a book about a wizard, you don't say, my book is just like Harry Potter, or my book will be successful like Harry Potter, because that's such a one-off situation.
It's like lightning in a jar.
That's an example with The Velveteen Rabbit, which is a classic. And of course, we want our book to be successful like that. And that it's, in this case, not really saying that the sales history is the thing to look at, but the presentation of the book. But in some ways, we just have a couple of titles that we're going to use, and they should be recent. They should be successful. And you can find out if a book has been successful by kind of squinting and looking at things like, what are the number of reviews? If you have access to BookScan, how many copies is this sold? BookScan being an imperfect system, but a way to get some numbers. So I'm with you that I would...
Which you don't... If you're listening to this to learn about query letters, you don't have access to BookScan.
You probably don't. Your friend Ben does, though. So if you really need help...
Somebody who does, yeah, that'd be more of the thing to do. I think The Velveteen Rabbit is also outside the genre. So this is a 72,000-word YA novel. The Velveteen Rabbit is a book that you can read to your kid in one sitting. It might be the night where you pick one bedtime story instead of three, but it's I don't think that title in particular is a useful comparison.
Okay. There was a little bit of repetition of language, one thing, and it helped probably because I was reading it out loud, but the word scars got used three times, and it's all within a couple sentences, and the phrase pain of her physical and emotional scars, and then heal the wounds and scars she carries, and then the next sentence, and begin to heal the scars she carries. So I would, like, this is a case where
you could just say begin to heal, period.
Right. And just trust that your audience is going to get that, and that you've already created a sympathetic character. We've got this greyhound. We know that this greyhound is struggling. We know that this greyhound is melancholic. And we know that this greyhound is looking for a larger connection to love and peace and the universe. And so you've already identified that. And we don't need to be reminded that the scars are there because we heard that and we internalized that.
I think that that may be part of, so I am a little undecided about the statistic and the children who suffer from anxiety and depression, and the book can help guide kids through their own healing journey. I think that that feels like it could be a little bit of an overreach perhaps. And again, I think it's for the same reasons that you can trust whoever's reading this story, this letter rather, is going to be fully aware of the power of literature. This is going to be somebody whose whole life is, like I spoke to Wendy, and she's just like, this is what she does. She's looking for work. She wants to contribute to the culture through literature. Anybody reading this letter is going to understand the power of books and what they can and can't do. And I think that they will, I think that trusting that they will understand the purposes and goals and power of a story like this could be more powerful than spelling it out.
Yeah. And truthfully, the query letter is a little bit long by normal standards. I would be looking to keep your query letter to one page. I would be looking to keep it to 250 words or so. And this letter came in at a little over 450 words. So there's room there to make some tightening up and some cuts without losing any of the punch. In fact, it may be even gaining the punch, because it's like what Jason was saying, like you're letting the reader imagine the punch more than you're telling them about the punch.
I think so. I think, like I said, I think that it starts out very strong. I think that that first paragraph, you know, you mentioned some repetition in the wording, but overall the writing, the adjectives, it's evocative. It's clear.
It's very clear. That's an important thing to point out there, is it's clear. I understand what's going on. I understand what the stakes are. I understand who I'm rooting for and why.
Yes. And then I think the plot gets a little bit, not lost, but maybe diffused as the letter goes on. In the third paragraph, after the list of the comparative titles, there is the line, this book differs in its approach to reach children. So there's an attempt to differentiate this book from the titles that the author lists. And I don't think that's necessary. I think that is a point where, and really the effect of that is to circle back around and then to start talking about what the story is again, which was accomplished thoroughly a couple of paragraphs ago. So I think that could be another place where the author could cut out some sentences and let those, I think that those contrasts are clear already.
Okay. So thank you to the person who submitted this. If you have any follow-up questions, you know how to email us and we can do our best to answer any questions you have. Thank you for allowing us to talk about your query letter on Collaboracast. And again, if there are others of you out there who want to do that, you can send them to info@collaborist.org and just mention in their query letter for the podcast. Do we have time for another one?
We do.
All right. You want to read this one?
Let's do this. I would love to. And again, I'm going to be redacting some things on the fly.
Okay.
I really enjoyed meeting you at AWP. Thank you for the opportunity to query you. I think we might be a good fit since you represent redacted and redacted. And since you said you are looking for a female-centered domestic suspense novel. Syringe in hand, Isabel sits on her bathroom floor deciding just how much to bleed. Not enough, and she won't be sick enough to go to the hospital. Too much, and she could die. Downstairs, her 16-year-old daughter Diana listens and prepares to call 911. Isabel has Munchausen syndrome, and Diana has always saved her when she's gone too far. The two of them lead a precariously balanced life, inventing illnesses and manipulating their fellow church members into taking up a collection for a completely fictitious medical bill. When Diana has a crisis of conscience and refuses to lie or call 911 anymore, Isabel desperately searches for another way to keep up the act, even if it means hurting Diana. At 78,000 words, title redacted, is a domestic suspense novel set in Galveston, Texas. It will appeal to fans of Christina McDonald's Behind Every Lie and Ivy Picciotto's atmospheric Visitation Street. I hold an MA in playwriting from the University of Cincinnati and an MFA and PhD in fiction writing from the University of Houston, where I won the Donald Barthelme Fellowship. I'm also the author of the column Title Redacted, which chronicled my own separation and divorce and ran weekly in the Houston Chronicle's blog, Gray Matters, from January 2015 to August 2016. Title Redacted is my first novel. Thank you for your time and consideration. I look forward to meeting you again at the next AWP.
All right. This is an excellent example of a query letter that is efficient and to the point. We have the author relying on a personal connection. They've already met this person. It's great. It's good to mention where you've met someone. And if you did have any kind of bonding moment, mention that in your query letter. And this is kind of a specific case. I'm gonna review this on the specific case, but then in general, just how this is as a query letter.
But she calls out a specific element of that conversation, which was the agent's desire for a female-centered domestic suspense novel.
Yeah. And I would say, we've already talked about this on the podcast, but my brain is terrible. My memory is terrible. It is. I'm very much with you in the moment when we are together, whoever's listening to this, whoever's seeing this, I am authentically 100% in the moment. But when I leave, it's like there's a memory dump, and I remember the emotional stuff, but I might not remember anything that we talked about. Like, and I wasn't joking earlier when I said strongly worded weather will be something I forget by next week. So if you have had the opportunity to meet with an agent or an editor and you are querying that person, putting in enough detail to have you stand out and that memory sort of confirmed is a good idea. Because if you just said to me, hey, I met you at this conference, I'd be like, man, I met like 50 people and I don't remember any of them. And I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say that, but it's like, oh yeah, wait, who was that? So if there is anything, like Jason pointed out, where this person says that they had a conversation and that the agent was looking for a female-centered domestic suspense novel, that's great. That's great information. You might have to like have taken a picture of the two of us together and like put that in your email and be like, this is us talking. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that. The synopsis is quick, to the point. I get it. I get the emotion of it. I see that there are damaged people. I see that there is someone trying to do something different in the form of Diana. I get the plot. It's going right along. It feels like a female-centered domestic suspense novel. It feels suspenseful. There's a lot of like, well, then what? Which is exactly what you want the person reading a query letter to think, is to ask, then what? Because if their curiosity is so piqued, they're going to say, submit the book to me. I have to read this. I have to know what happens. You've set up some amazing story and I need to see how it plays out. So well done there. We get the word count, 78,000 words. We get the title. We already know, as mentioned before, that this is a domestic suspense novel. So we've got that. We get two comp titles. We get Christina McDonald's Behind Every Lie and Ivy Pacheco's Atmospheric Visitation Street. We see the author's credentials. They are quick and to the point. And as I pointed out, just longtime listeners of the podcast will remember that Jason was born in the Cincinnati area and that I have a connection to the Cincinnati area too. So it's just one of those things where when I hear that, you might think to yourself, that's not at all a relevant detail, except that it is, because in my head, then I'm like, oh, if I talk to this person in the future, we're going to be able to do the like, oh, well, where were you in Cincinnati? Oh, I was here, which doesn't seem like it has anything to do with the book.
Thought you said you had a bad memory.
Oh, then I guess there's that. But in my case, it's just a, oh, you've been out and you've seen the world and you've been places and I've been places. And like, what did you think of that place? So this isn't about the book, but it's about the relationship. And it's about like, well, how do we tell the stories of the places we've been? And I will admit that I am probably an outlier as far as like how these things are important to me. But I'm also someone who's been to all 50 states and I particularly have a connection to some cities. And so it's always an opportunity for me to talk about something that I care about. And then I'm talking about the book because now I'm invested in you as a person. And now I'm invested in your book because, oh yeah, we both have been to this Skyline Chili in Cincinnati. And like, it's...
I was just going to say, there's only, as soon as Cincinnati comes up, there's the first thing on the list is Skyline Chili.
Yeah, exactly. Terrible, but it's noteworthy. So yeah, it's there. That's
fighting words there, buddy. We would fly in. We would fly in and that place was open. It would be 2 a.m. We'd fly in and, you know, this is me as a 11-year-old going back to visit my grandparents. We'd land at midnight and it was mandatory first stop was Skyline Chili, even if it meant we were pulling up at grandma's at 2 a.m.
Well, see, this is a perfect bonding thing. Now you and I will always have the Skyline Chili debate. And I've had Skyline Chili. Yeah.
Who needs Paris when you got Skyline Chili?
Yeah. So these are the like the intrinsic, unqualifiable things that help. And I see that happen. I'll get queries and people will be like, oh, I've been to Madison. I love Madison. And it's weird because there are some times where I'm like, I'm bonding with you because you mentioned a city. You're trying to force the issue by mentioning a city. Like there's a time where I'm like, okay, now this doesn't feel organic. And maybe it's part of like, if I don't know that you've been to a place or done a thing, then I'm more intrigued by it. But if you're like, oh, I live in your backyard. Are you interested in my book? Maybe not. That said, I just acquired a book from somebody who lives in Madison. And I ended up, when we were talking about the company and acquiring things and her book, it turns out we went to the same school for a year. And we were in the same grade. And that's really sort of interesting and fascinating to me. We didn't remember each other, but we were there at the same time. And I like, that's the kind of thing where now I'm like, oh yeah, I've got Black Hawk Middle School pride here. And I want to make sure that this person makes it like, and is successful because it's a reflection yeah. on the school where I went
to Black Hawks or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when I went, it was Gompers Middle School, and Gompers, Samuel Gompers, was a labor organizer. And small story here, when I was in sixth grade, school was looking for a mascot, did not have a mascot, it was looking for a mascot, and I suggested the Bulldogs, and the Bulldogs won. I doubt that they are still have any connection to that. I don't even know if it was official, but as you've already seen with strongly worded weather, I will come up with a name and I will push it. Anyway, I think this is an excellent query letter. This is happens to be in the genre area of books that I acquire and have for the last 20 years, crime, suspense, mystery, thriller, that whole arena. And if this came across my desk, I would say, well done.
Send me some pages. Let me see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that there sometimes, and this is this. So you and I both have a fondness for metal, which is another artistic output that can be subgenred to death.
Absolutely.
But I think that there are, I think in fiction, there can be, and I don't think this letter is doing it, the domestic suspense novel, but I think that there are, you know, the urban fantasy versus fantasy versus, you know, I think especially when it comes to fantasy, there are subgenres and subgenres, and that may be interesting on Reddit, but I think when it comes to, I mean, I don't know, that there's a certain point at which you don't want to have a 5-word genre.
I like the point you're making.
I'm not making it very well, but.
But where I see that more, and we've talked about this, is when people talk about being a bestseller. And then you're like, really? Like New York Times, LA Times? Where were you a bestseller? And then it's like, well, I was in Amazon. And then it's like, mysteries, farming, John Deere tractor related, mysteries, farming, antique John Deere tractor related. Oh yeah, I was number 3 in that category. It's like, okay, that's kind of stretching it. So that to me is the, like, let's super classify the genre. This one, in this particular case, and I know you said that you weren't talking about here, domestic suspense is a recognized subgenre that is discussed. So that works here. It also, to me, shows that the author is aware of the market, aware of the book's place in the market, and that's important. I was going to check these two titles on BookScan. While Jason talks, I'm going to log into BookScan and see if Behind Every Lie and Visitation Street meet the qualifications of what we're looking for in comp titles.
Well, I'll say that anytime anybody mentions Donald Barthelme, I'm definitely leaning in. Although this was the Donald Barthelme Fellowship at the University of Houston, definitely mentioning any awards that you've won, any kind of honors, any kind of fellowships is a good thing to do. But yeah, I love that guy, Donald Barthelme.
Speaking of which, we have started a shop on bookshop.org. So when we talk about a book on this here podcast, we're going to have that book listed in the show notes with a very specific link. If you purchase using those links, we'll get like 7 cents, which, you know, after time adds up to 70 cents. And we can probably buy a fancy office building or something. I'm not really sure.
Bottom's going to fall out of the real estate market at some point.
It's gotta.
Uprising by Donald Barthelme. That short story. I've mentioned the New Yorker's short fiction podcast. It's authors reading other authors' short stories. There is an episode of, I don't remember the reader, but somebody reading The Indian Uprising by Donald Barthelme. And I've listened to it probably 100 times in my life, and I can't get enough of it.
We definitely need to put that link. I think we put it in an earlier episode, but we need to put it in the show notes for this one. Okay. I'm now at Behind Every Lie by Christina McDonald. And the publication date is listed as February of 2020. So I would say that we are safely within the window of this is a contemporary title. And the sales numbers, according to BookScan, are such that I would say, okay, that's a good comp. I can maybe get into this in a later episode. BookScan, I'm just going to give this super short summary. BookScan is the publishing industry's, it's It's run by Nielsen. It's the same people who track like record sales, so like Gold Record, et cetera, et cetera. The problem with BookScan and the book sales is that they are counting sales that are through Amazon major chains, which don't really exist all that much anymore. Select independent bookstores. I don't believe that it counts library sales. What they say about BookScan sales numbers is that whatever it says here on BookScan is maybe like 50% of total sales, but it could be 40%, it could be 30%, it could be 70%. It's maddening. It's maddening as far as being able to give you any kind of concrete data, but it's the best resource that we have right now. So when we look at BookScan, I want to see copies. I want to see sales in the thousands. I don't want to see things much below that unless I know what the extenuating circumstances are. This Christina McDonald book that came out has essentially 12,000 copies sold, released to date. So if we use the kind of math and we say, okay, that means that there's 20 to 25,000 copies sold. And that in today's market would be considered very successful. The other book that was mentioned, Visitation Street, it has, between hardcover and paperback, it has about 15,000 here. So we could say that's maybe 30,000. Now, what is important to point out here is that Visitation Street came out in 2013. So most publishers, agents looking for comp titles would probably say that's outside of what the range is. But this is not a hard science. And by hard, I don't mean the difficulty. I mean that there's the rules are kind of loosey-goosey. And it's frustrating for authors to figure out comp titles. It's frustrating to me to have to figure out what I'm supposed to do with the information, especially when it's kind of incomplete.
I think BookScan is not a cheap service. And if they can sell that data and the accuracy is like, this might be somewhere between 30 and 70%. Why don't you just give us a ton of money for our possibly somewhat accurate data?
Yeah.
I think that's a good,
it's basically a magic eight ball. It's basically a magic eight ball. Was this book successful? Maybe. Yeah, okay.
Ask again later. That'll be $5,000.
How would you define successful? So there's those are those things. So those comp titles, A plus for one of them, B minus. It's not anything on the author. It's just it's an older title. The sales look good. I'm sure it's relevant to the book editorial direction. It's just a matter of the recency of it.
Is that the only flaw that we can find in this letter, if that even could be called a flaw? I do like how she mentions again at the end, I look forward to meeting you at the next AWP. That's very, very quick, very pithy, but also very just brings it back around.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then it gives that person idea of like, I'm going to see this person again. I better make sure that I read this query and give a good response. Otherwise, I will tell you, I have had people approach me to pitch books in all of the wrong places. Like, you know, I like going to the men's room and someone will start talking to me like, okay, picture it. And my 75,000 word, like, no. I'm on lunch. This isn't even a conference. Just overheard somebody say that I'm working publishing. Like, no, this is not a thing that's going to happen. But I mean, as we've talked about before, people send gifts, people do all kinds of things that don't help their cause. This is a perfect query letter to say, I'm giving you the information you need. I'm presenting it in a concise and digestible way. Your move.
It's 288 words.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thank you again to both of these people. And I look forward to doing this. Do people find this helpful? If this is helpful, we would love to do it. It's fun. It's content. We're a content mill. We just try to generate as much stuff. We're just looking up keywords, buzzwords, Google AdWords, whatever. And we're just trying to do the thing that makes people click on the buttons. So yeah, should we just say maybe like in a month or so, if people want to send some in, we'll let them build up for a while and then we'll pick a few in a month and do this again. Maybe
sounds it's good to me. Sure.
Second Wednesday of the month, second podcast of the month, we'll do query letter review.
Every third blue moon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's part of it. You just got to crack the code. I don't have anything more, Mr. Jason. Do you have anything?
Just a big thank you to everybody who sent in the letters, and a big thank you for letting us sit here and talk about your work in front of our thousands of listeners.
I actually just thought of it. I want to give a special thank you to author Mark Westmoreland, who today on Twitter, today is May 10th, someone was asking about good podcasts for writers, and he specifically mentioned Collabracast. So thank you, Mark, for spreading the word.
Thank you, Mark.
It's great. It's great to know that someone's listening. Hi, Mom. My mom's probably listening too, but besides that, I don't know what the reach is. I don't look at the statistics and all of that. But speaking of statistics, rate and review the podcast wherever you get them, because apparently that helps with the statistics, but I am not a math guy. You can follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, AOL, MySpace. We're all of the places.
Friendster. I think we're on Friendster.
Yeah.
Those Twitter mentions.
They're big. They're a big deal. So that's it for me.
For community.
For story.
Collaborist.
All right, I'm going to go listen
story
to...
Story first, community first.
Story. Whatever, community. We're under tornado watch, so I'm going to go do some strongly worded weather. I'll see everybody later. Out.